Welcome. This is a live Google Hangout at templestudy.com, a fireside discussion about the temple. We're excited about this. This is something definitely very new for all of us. Glad you could join us. We're going to introduce ourselves first so you know who we all are, and then we'll kind of talk about what this is going to be all about. And the text that we're going to be using to springboard our discussion, and then we'll just hop right into the text. So I'll introduce myself first. I'm Bryce Hayman. I am the founding editor of templestudy.com, and I've been blogging there for about, 4 years? Maybe 4 to 5 years now at templestudy.com, and I've really enjoyed that, really enjoyed learning about the temple and increasing my knowledge and then sharing what I've learned and studied with other people. It's really been enjoyable for me. Just recently, I was able to work with Dan Peterson and William Hamblin and others to build and launch a new journal called Interpreter, a journal of Mormon scripture, which is a great opportunity for a new avenue in apologetics and defending the church and the gospel. So I'm really excited about that. So that's a brief intro of me. We will now switch over to Rick Huckel. Is with us. Rick, if you could introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Rick. I have been interested in the temple for perhaps longer than some of you have been in mortality. It's been a passion of mine. I had several opportunities. At one point, I was hired away from BYU to work in the Salt Lake Temple. My job was to know everything there was to know about the endowment so that translators who had questions concerning parts of the endowments could get their translations correct. I've written a lot, maybe too much. And at the present time, I'm involved with Gary Anderson, John Hall, and Jack Welch in putting together the conference that will be held in October. I imagine you've seen Bryce's page about that. It's a Ancient Temples and Mormonism conference, which I think will be quite exciting, and that's plenty about me.
Yeah, let me just actually, I'm going to switch over and just show that really quickly for our viewers to see, so they can know what we're talking about. So this is the website that Rick is talking about, templestudies.org, the Academy for Temple Studies. And like he said, this is a new academy that Rick has put together, and we're really excited about it. There's going to be, like he said, a conference coming up that deals with the temple up in Logan, Utah. It's on October 29th, and you can see the details here on this website. Again, templestudies.org. We're really excited about that. Margaret Barker and Lawrence Hemming and many other great presenters are going to be coming. Here's just a sampling. Gary Anderson, Daniel Bachman, Margaret Barker, Philip Barlow, LeGrand Davies, John O'Falls, John Hall, Lawrence Hemming. There's Rick who's with us tonight. Daniel Peterson and John Welch will be the presenters at that conference. So that's really exciting, and we're so glad to have you with us, Rick, tonight. Actually, while I'm over there, let me also show this one. I mentioned Interpreter, and here it is. This is the new journal that Daniel Peterson announced on Friday at the FAIR conference in Sandy, Utah. It is a new journal that will be focused on Latter-day Saint scriptures and helping us increase our understanding of scriptures. So very exciting stuff, really exciting time in LDS studies. All right, thank you, Rick. Let's go to Steve. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Steve.
Uh-oh.
Steve Fry. I grew up in Texas.
We're good. Keep going.
Okay. Yes. Can you hear me all right? All right. I was just saying I grew up in Texas. I live in Las Vegas now, and several years back, I came across Temple Study, and I was just really intrigued by it. I love everything having to do with the temple. I'm giving you a little plug there, but no, it was fantastic. I really enjoyed the content and the material there, and how it was being presented and how it was being covered. And I honestly thought that some of the information provided there was great for the public as well as people who were familiar with the temple. And so, just seeing that out there, and then just reading a little article from Elder Ballard where he said that we should all be out there engaging in the discussion, that kind of prompted me to start my own site and just start exploring and putting some information out there. It's more of a public journal. I'm not a writer. I'm not a scholar. I just enjoy the temple as something that can be used as scripture that you can enter into, that you can experience, that you can use in a very dynamic and unique way in our faith. And I think there's a lot that members and those who aren't members of the church alike can really learn from the temple that is just starting to maybe get out there. At least I'm starting to see it more often. So I think the more that we can talk about it and get it out there and help people understand, either if they're curious about it or members are seeking to figure out, how do you use the temple really? We go there, there's ordinances, but what else is there? What else can we learn about this place? So, I was invited here by Bryce, and I like everything Bryce does. So.
Well, we sure appreciate you, Steve. I have enjoyed reading what you have written about the gospel and about the temple and about symbolism. And just so everyone knows, Steve is an awesome, awesome designer. In fact, better than me, I would say. Much better.
That means he's really, really good.
He is absolutely, absolutely excellent. So we sure appreciate you, Steve, for being here with us tonight. Thank you.
Thanks for the invitation.
What's your site, Steve?
Yeah, what's your site?
It's oneclimbs.com.
This is Steve Reed's site. Oneclimbs.com and is where he blogs about all sorts of different things related to the gospel. Like you said, it's kind of a journal of sorts, but I think he does an absolutely excellent job with the things that he writes about here. So check it out, everybody. All right. Thank you, Steve. Tevye Washburn, could you introduce yourself?
Sure, yeah. I actually kind of have a similar story to Steve's. I came across the temple study some time ago and started my own blog. I have one called Sacred Symbolic that's sort of similar to Steve's. It's just kind of general gospel stuff. It often focuses on the temple, but often other stuff as well, and I'm an amateur too. I'm not a scholar or anything like that. Mine doesn't look as fancy as Steve's, but interestingly,
is this that right?
Yep, that's the one. Interestingly, without getting too much into technical stuff, it was my initial contact with Bryce, asking him about how he did his blog and some different things like that that put me where I am today. My whole career is built around the platform that runs Temple Study and runs my blogs and stuff like that. Because of that initial contact with Bryce, I got introduced to it, and it was kind of the solution I'd always been looking for. And years of work at different things, but now it's my whole job.
That's awesome.
So I do that, and then probably more people know me from Mormon Life Hacker.
Oh yeah.
I started and run that blog as well.
Let's throw that one up here while we're at it.
I guess maybe a good way to put it is Bryce helped me out with a very small thing, but it ended up being multiplying over time and becoming a huge thing. And yet this is the closest to meeting face-to-face that I've ever done with him.
We've always wanted to go out and have a lunch or something, but it's never happened. Same with Steve, huh?
Yes.
Something we've always tried to do, it's just never worked out.
That's right. Yeah, we've had good intentions, right?
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah. I really appreciate Tevye. Some of you might have seen his name pop up because of the RestoreFarms.com movement. When we saw what happened to farms at the Maxwell Institute, we were a little bit sad, to say the least, and wanted to see that kind of scholarship and that kind of apologetics just really live on and keep going. And so we started RestoreFarms.com, and I could actually throw that one up here too, because Tevye really helped spearhead that. And I really appreciate all the effort that he did that went into that, getting that launched and getting it going and everything. And I think that really made a difference in keeping, you know, that spirit alive and the energy and the enthusiasm going for farms. So thank you, Tevye.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Well, those were some good introductions. I think everybody knows well now who we have here. We have a great people with us, and looking forward to our discussion here together. What this is going to be, it's going to kind of be like a fireside discussion. I know that typically firesides in the church are kind of known as this meeting that you go to in the evening on a Sunday. In the church we have this conception of a fireside as kind of an evening meeting. You go to the church building and sit down in the chapel and hear some great talks given. But I think the idea of a fireside discussion actually kind of originated in a little bit earlier. I'm not sure how early in the LDS culture the idea of a fireside really came about, but maybe Rick can provide some more details there. He's kind of our resident historian here. He knows certainly much more than I do.
Well, I remember when the word started to be used. There just wasn't such a thing back in the 40s and 50s, and it was in the probably early to mid 60s. People started to say, oh, we're having a meeting. We call it a fireside.
Yeah.
And it just developed from there. I think it's really a Mormon construct.
Yeah.
Even though the concept of speaking by the side of the fire goes way back to the pre-electric days. But
Sure.
It's a kind of a Mormon thing, I think.
Yeah. I guess before we coined that term, it was probably more used, you know, people used to gather together around the fire to talk, right? That was kind of the idea. So the LDS culture kind of picked up on that and turned it into a meeting. I actually have a funny, kind of a funny anecdote about that to share just briefly. I had a member of another faith, a non-member, friend that I had back at BYU, and I invited him to a fireside that was going to be on a Sunday evening, and I said, yeah, come, and he was all excited, and he wanted to come and support and kind of learn a little bit more about the church and everything, and sure enough, he arrived in jeans and a hat, and he was ready to build the bonfires. Kind of, I didn't quite prepare him for that experience, and so he thought, you know, we were gonna build bonfires and talk around the bonfire, I guess, which isn't quite you know what we have in mind. But I think it's probably a good analogy with the temple. When we talk about the temple, it's a lot different than what others of other faiths think about when we say temple. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we're doing this tonight, and hopefully if this works out and is a good thing, we could continue to do on in the future, kind of describe and discuss what it is about the temple that's so special to the LDS Church and to our doctrine. And we had some music going there for a second.
Yes, soundtrack. Great.
So we hope this this will be an opportunity not only for members, but members of other faiths even, that might be able to listen to these firesides and learn a little bit more about where we're coming from in terms of our temple tradition and why we have a temple and what is temple worship? Why is it so important to us? Those sorts of questions and the history of temples. There's an amazing, rich history and heritage of temple worship going back to the beginning of recorded history. And it's really quite fascinating when you start getting into it and learning about it and studying it. And so we hope to unsurface a lot of that and talk about it and, you know, how does it relate to the temple today and that sort of thing. Some members who might view this might be a little bit worried. I can see that happening, that they might say, oh no, they're talking about the temple. This isn't a good thing. But no need to worry. I think we're in good hands here. I just want to share just a couple quotes about the temple and talking about the temple specifically so we know what we're doing and where we're going here. Probably one of the best quotes is by President Boyd K. Packer in one of the best landmark type, probably most popular books about the temple called The Holy Temple, again by Boyd K. Packer. And in that book, I'll just quote here from the book. He says, quote, "Our reluctance to speak of the sacred temple ordinances is not any way an attempt to make them seem more mysterious or to encourage an improper curiosity about them. They are kept confidential lest they be given to those who are unprepared. There are some blessings which can be bestowed only in the Lord's temple, and we do not talk of them outside the temple. We are not free to discuss the temple ordinances and ceremonies. Without the spiritual atmosphere of the temple itself and without the worthiness and preparation required of those who go there, the temple ceremonies would not be quickly understood and might be quite misunderstood." And then here's the key point. He says, "While we cannot discuss in detail the temple ordinances and ceremonies, there is much we can discuss in this book, and we will." And that's in the very first chapter, I believe, of The Holy Temple. And then he goes on, of course, the rest of the book, talking about the doctrines and the principles and the history and the great richness of the temple. And so, yes, there are certain things about the temple we can't discuss. I wouldn't ever want to start talking in detail about the temple. It's not appropriate. I take my covenants, my temple covenants, very sacred, and they're not supposed to be discussed outside of those sacred walls. But just like President Packer says, there is much we can discuss that doesn't go into detail about our modern temple rites. For example, we can talk a lot about history of temples throughout history, much in the same way that Hugh Nibley did during much of his career. And speaking of Hugh Nibley, I have another quote here from Hugh Nibley that I think is relevant here. He said, quote, what the Mormons like best about their temples is the obligation of secrecy that exonerates them from ever having to speak and hence to think about what they have learned by the ordinances and teachings. So strict they are, or are they, in observing the confidential nature of those teachings that they, for the most part, scrupulously avoid dropping so much as a hint to outsiders by putting any of them into practice. End quote. That's That's pure nibbly there, if you ask me.
That is vintage nibbly. Bryce?
Yes, go ahead.
I just had a call from Gary. He's back.
Okay.
And he would like to come in if you can send him an invitation. Says he's at his computer.
So here on the Academy for Temple Studies website is a short bio about Gary Anderson, who's joining our discussion as we speak, walking through all the technical hurdles to get in here. Definitely not an easy thing. So we'll hold the discussion a little bit, but I do want to introduce him here. As it says here, Gary was born in Logan, completed a BA degree at Utah State in political science, minor in Russian. He received his commission as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army after serving as a commander of the ROTC detachment. I guess I'll just keep reading. Upon graduation, he was accepted into the law school at University of Utah and worked in gubernatorial campaign one summer, and then the next year as a law clerk at the Attorney General's office. Upon receiving his law degree, he took the bar examination, and while awaiting the results, completed officer training in Indiana. Successfully passing the Utah bar exam, he was hired by the law firm of Hilliard and Gunnell in Logan, Utah, where he has practiced since that time, specializing in business and estate planning and pension law. The firm is now known as Hilliard, Anderson, and Olson. Let's see how we're doing here. Looks like he's still working on it. He has been a member of the Mormon History Association for more than 20 years and has presented papers on Cache Valley history. He authored the pamphlet called Logan's Historic Main Street that is distributed to visitors to acquaint them with the history of Logan, Utah. He also helped produce his historical pieces on Logan Canyon and recently worked on a joint effort to produce the Cache Valley Heritage Driving Tour and Map. Mr. Anderson has shared his expertise as an attorney in many different civic capacities, including appointments to the Logan City Power Board and the Salt Palace Fine Arts Advisory Board. He was a founding member of the Capital Arts Alliance and the Utah Festival Opera Company and was instrumental in the renovation of the Ellen Eccles Theater. He returned to Logan in 1998 after serving as president of the Russia-St. Petersburg Mission of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He has served on the Utah State Board of History and is presently serving on the board of the American West Heritage Foundation and the Cache Valley Regional Council. He is a husband to Cheryl and father to 5 children. So that's Gary Anderson, the one who we're trying to help get into our conversation here. As you can see there on the Academy for Temple Studies site, he is one of the presenters at that conference. Looking forward to that. And I think if I switch over here to the schedule, you can see he will be giving the welcome, in fact, to the conference. So he's been instrumental, I know, having worked with Rick Kuechel, that he's been instrumental in getting this conference organized and started and going. And we sure appreciate all of that, because I for one am very excited about this conference coming up in October. Welcome, Gary, to this Temple Study Google Hangouts on Air discussion is kind of the long the long term for it. We sure appreciate you being here and making it in even late. We are sure welcome to have you. We kind of have already introduced you, but I don't know if you want to say just a couple words about where you come from and what your interest is in the temple.
He read us the bio that is on the Academy for Temple Studies site.
Okay.
So they know that much.
Well, actually, I just came from a temple study discussion with my family. We've been reading John Butler's book called Plain and Precious Things.
Oh, great.
I don't know if you've heard about that, but that has opened my eyes in terms of what's in the Book of Mormon about temples.
Wonderful.
I think anyway, I sorry to interlope a little bit late, but I'll just kind of listen and Actually, I just why don't everybody just tell me what your names are, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can do a short intro again. So I'm Bryce Hammond. I'm the founding editor of templestudy.com, the one that kind of helped put this thing together. And, of course, you know Rick Kuechel.
Yes.
And here we have Steve Reed. You want to do a short intro again of you, Steve?
Sure. I'm a graphic designer currently living in Las Vegas. I came across Temple Study several years ago, and I just love the content. I love talking about the temple, learning about it, going there, and everything. So I'm here. I'm here to mostly... I'd really like to learn from a lot of you guys here. There's a good collection of knowledge, and I just love to learn from other people and just suck it in. So
awesome, awesome. Well, we're sure glad to have you, Steve. Tevye, could you do just a quick intro of you as well?
Sure. Yeah, I'm pretty much here for the same reasons as Steve. I hope to learn a lot, and I run a blog called Mormon Life Hacker. And another personal one called Sacred Symbolic.
Wonderful. Some great websites. Great websites. Sure appreciate having Tevye here with us. All right. So, sorry for the hiatus there, but we really wanted Gary in on this discussion because he does know a lot about the temple as well, and is a close friend of Rick. And so we definitely wanted him in. So we... appreciate your patience with us. Now, what we were talking about before we brought in Gary was about this fact that there are a lot of things about the temple that we should not be discussing outside of the temple. In fact, doing so would profane those things, and we'll talk a little bit about what the difference is between the sacred and the profane. The sacred stays inside the temple; it's not taken out of the temple. Into the profane space. So we talked a little bit about that and what President Packer has said on the subject. But then we also noted that President Packer has said that there is much we can discuss. And then he goes on to talk a lot about the temple in his book, The Holy Temple. And so there are many things, principles, doctrines, history of ancient temples that are perfectly fair game to this discuss, learn about, study, and which apply quite a lot to our modern-day temple worship and help us understand more about the temple. I shared a quote from Hugh Nibley. I won't repeat that. But there is another one here by President Benson where he also expresses the sentiment that we need to do more in terms of talking about the temple and studying it and learning about it. So I'll just read that. President Benson said this, quote, "Because of the temple's sacredness, we are sometimes reluctant to say anything about the temple to our children and grandchildren. As a consequence, many do not develop a real desire to go to the temple, or when they go there, they do so without much background to prepare them for the obligations and covenants they enter into." Close quote. So that's President Benson, who was a prophet of the church, president of the church, who said that we can take our not speaking of the temple to such an extent that we don't even teach it to our own children. And that's kind of sad, I think.
I think the word you're looking for is reticence.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I may add just a couple of things.
Go ahead.
In a discussion with one of the general authorities on this very subject, he said to me, really, there are only two things we cannot talk about. We cannot talk about in public the marks on the garments and what they mean, and we cannot talk about the signs and tokens. Mm-hmm. Other than that, if we're judicious, all the rest of it we can talk about in a solemn and sacred way. President McKay gave a talk to outgoing missionaries. This was in 1942. the missionaries were all gathered in the chapel, I think, in the old Salt Lake Temple annex, the Byzantine-looking one. And he gave them a talk about the temple. And he said, when I first went through the temple, I was totally unprepared. And I thought it was very weird. I said, so I want to explain to you something. And it's a very good talk. I'm sure it's on the net someplace. But he made it clear that there are things that can be discussed, and quite a few of them. Because if we're not prepared, the temple is so different from anything around us today that unless people are prepared for it, they just find it strange.
I gave a lesson a couple of three Sundays ago on Alma 13, which is clearly a temple text. And in prefacing my remarks, since I was just a substitute that day in Sunday school, I went to the same issue of what can we talk about in the temple. Let me read to you about what James E. Talmage said about what goes on in the temple. This is his book, The House of the Lord. The temple endowment as administered in modern temples includes a recital of the most prominent events of the creative period, the condition of our first parents in the Garden of Eden, their disobedience and consequent expulsion from that blissful abode, their condition in the lone and dreary world when doomed to live by labor and sweat, the plan of redemption by which the great transgression may be atoned, the period of the great apostasy, the restoration of the gospel with all its ancient powers and privileges, the absolute and indispensable condition of personal purity and devotion to the right in present life, and strict compliance with gospel requirements. And then President Benson taught, because I was going to talk about the order of the Son of God, which he talked about in Alma 13, he said, to enter into the order of the Son of God is the equivalent today of entering into the fullness of the Melchizedek priesthood, which is only received in the house of the Lord. Now, if you put that together with what we learned from Margaret Barker about the temple, and Margaret is a good friend of Rick's and I, and there isn't a whole lot you can't talk about in the that goes on in the temple just by reading Margaret Barker. I mean, literally.
And she's not even a member of the church.
She's not even a member of the church. And we were talking today about there's a reference. Don Bradley talked about a reference in Book of Mormon about ether in the Fair Conference a couple of days ago. And he's talking about the hand going through the veil. Well, okay, it's right there in the Book of Mormon, number one. And number two, it's on the front page. It's on the cover of two of Margaret Barker's books.
Yeah.
So I agree with Rick that there's, if as long as we're judicious and we're not doing anything that's out of the ordinary in terms of just talking about what's actually out there, and I'm not talking about going on the internet and finding the temple the temple ceremony. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about legitimate scholarly stuff that's out there, and there. Yeah. I've learned a lot more, frankly, from Margaret Barker about the temple than I ever did before then.
Yeah.
And that's maybe just because I'm stupid, but. Hey.
Just to let our viewers know a little bit. We're talking about Margaret Barker. She is a Methodist scholar who lives in England. What city in England?
Well, it's not a city. It's a little hamlet called Barrowash.
Okay.
Barrowash, Derbyshire, and I've been there to her house, and she is a wonderful, wonderful lady.
Wonderful.
She lives just down the street from the Methodist church.
Yeah. So she's a Methodist scholar who has come up recently. Quite a bit in LDS studies because of her very unique insights into the Bible, especially the Old Testament, the really old Testament, trying to reconstruct what may have been lost in the very, very early periods of the Old Testament, particularly dealing with such subjects as Melchizedek and Enoch, subjects that obviously ring very interestingly in our ears as Latter-day Saints, and she has dealt with that subject in a very interesting way. And we'll talk, I'm sure, more about her work as we go through this book, Temple Worship. While
Gary's been talking, I went and found the David O. McKay talk.
Oh, good.
It is online. If you will Google up David O. McKay, Salt Lake Temple Annex, 1941,
good.
You'll pull it up, and it's the BYU-Idaho site,
Okay.
That it's on.
Wonderful.
Now, to kind of drive one more nail into this, we can't talk about the temple. In H.H. Bancroft's History of Utah, which was published in 1894, he has a description of the Mormon temple ceremony, which is one of the most thorough I've ever seen. And this is a book that was published under the auspices of the First Presidency, and the First Presidency sent out ads to all Latter-day Saints in the newspaper saying, we encourage you to buy this book. And it's a very detailed presentation on what the Mormon Endowment is. So,
interesting. What's the name of that book again?
It's called History of Utah. H. H. Bancroft. Bancroft was a professional historian who wrote histories of a lot of states and a lot of other things. The book is about, 3.5 inches thick.
Wow.
It's a standard old book. It's been reprinted. But you particularly, Bryce, probably ought to just find Bancroft. Because, it's more, I was surprised at how detailed it was.
Yeah.
Especially when I found out that this book had been advertised to the public by the First Presidency.
Wow.
So
that's very interesting.
For what it's worth.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Rick. I've heard that for some time, that there was some kind of a publication like that that the First Presidency had been okay with and even, approved, but could never pinpoint what it was. I've been looking for that.
I'm going to run in the other room and grab it while you're talking.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
Let me give you one other quote from President Benson, because I think this is helpful. Because this is the issue that I was talking about in prefacing my lesson, trying to make sure that I was doing what was appropriate in Sunday school, and then making sure that people did feel comfortable as we talked about the temple allusions in Alma 13. But anyway, here's what President Benson said. Everything we learn in the holy places, the temples, is based on the scripture. These teachings are what the scriptures refer to as the mysteries of godliness. They are to be comprehended by the power of the Holy Ghost, for the Lord has given his promise to his faithful and obedient servants. Thou mayest know the mysteries and peaceable things. That's in Doctrine and Covenants 42:61. And while Rick is showing you this other book, I'm going to try to find the reference for this talk of President Benson's. He said, what I would hope that you would talk to my grandchildren about as far as the temple is concerned. That, you've got that talk reference too, don't you, Rick, somewhere?
Yes, I do.
Excellent talk.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. I think, just generally speaking, if we're in tune with the Spirit, especially, then I think we'll know and be able to pass the smell test when it comes to whether or not we should be talking about something. I, for one, myself, don't like to really talk a lot about the modern temple. I do in, doctrines and principles and things like that. Where I really like to study the temple is in the past. And like I said before, studying, and this is exactly what Hugh Nibley did, right? He brought up all of these very interesting parallels, you could call them, with what happens today. And they shed quite a bit of light on our understanding without talking about the details of the actual modern day rites.
Yeah.
So that's a good example to follow.
Nibley was the master.
Absolutely.
In Bancroft, if you can get your hands on it, pages 357 and 358.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Good to have the reference.
And I would second what you just said, Bryce, about, honestly, I never talk about the modern temple. I just let people resonate.
Yep.
when you read stuff that is historical, yep, and then just let people draw their own assumptions from what you're saying, those who have been through the temple and are sensitive to that, They know exactly what you're talking about, just like who it is with Nibley.
And that's what Nibley said often. He said, you know, the endowed Latter-day Saints will know what I'm talking about here. So, very good. All right, well, let's, now that it's almost 8:30, should we jump into the text?
Let's.
But I think this has been a good introduction. I think this is important to let viewers understand and know, yes, there are certain things we shouldn't be talking about. We definitely recognize that. But there is yet still a lot we can talk about. And so we shouldn't let those things that we know we shouldn't talk about, the details of the ordinances and the ceremonies of our modern-day temple, prevent us from studying the temple and learning more about it and increasing our understanding, which helps to build faith and so forth. And in fact, if we go into the text now of temple worship, this is a book by Andrew C. Skinner. I'd like to just do a quick... just a quick introduction to this book. I read it a few years ago. It came out in 2007. And I read it, and I thought it was very good. In fact, I highlighted quite a bit of it when I went through it, and I thought he touched on a lot of really great points, both ancient and modern and everything in between, quite wide-ranging. And I think it's because of his background. He's quite a knowledgeable author. And I'll just read a short bio here. Andrew C. Skinner is a professor of ancient scripture at Brigham Young University, was dean of the religious education, and the first executive director of BYU's Neil A. Maxwell Institute for Religious Scholarship. He holds master's degrees in biblical Hebrew and Jewish studies, and a PhD in Near Eastern and European history, specializing in Judaism. He is the author or co-author of over 100 publications. So that kind of gives you a background for Andrew C. Skinner, who wrote this book. And this is what it looks like. There's the cover. And let me show you what we're going to be talking about. You can see that. There's my notes for for this. So, as I was saying, Dr. Skinner actually introduces his book talking a little bit about this subject of what is all right to talk about and what's not. And I'll just read the first paragraph. This volume touches on truths that we may glean from our experiences in the house of the Lord and which can bless our lives and strengthen our testimonies. So just starting out right there, he notes how learning more about the temple can bless our lives and strengthen our testimonies. That's just, you know, that's one great blessing of doing this, of studying the temple, learning more about it, and applying what we learn to our lives. He goes on, obviously it is not comprehensive. It does not teach in detail about what happens in the temples of the Lord, but rather discusses the doctrines and principles on which temple worship is founded and the blessings that flow from temple worship. It came about as the culmination and convergence of several developments, which I thought that was interesting when I read that, because the temple itself really is a culmination and convergence of the gospel and of life all coming together as the pinnacle, really, of our worship in the church and where we're all going. Does anyone have any comments on that opening statement there?
Well, just that you said this is what you're going to do, and I just, about 2 or 3 hours ago, just downloaded it on my Kindle. It cost you all of $13, but it's available that way, so I'm just reading it along with you.
Oh, good. Very good.
No, I want to get into paragraph two.
I know you do. I know you do. So let's do that. Do you actually want to read that, Rick?
Sure. More than a decade ago, I began thinking intensely about statements made by Hugh Nibley regarding the temple. He had said profound things, truths which have become a part of me, my own thoughts and my own words, though their exact expressions are original with him. Now, should I keep reading or should I go off?
You can comment on anything you'd like, Rick.
The temple is a model of the universe. That's where I want to start.
Okay.
What Nibley's exact statement was is, well, let me read it. What makes a temple, and first time I read this, I went past it. And then I came back and I said, what is he saying here? I have known Brother Nibley well enough and followed him long enough and spent enough personal time with him that he doesn't just say throwaway things. When he says something, there's something in it. What makes a temple different from other buildings is not its sacredness, but its form and function. And I always thought you could just build a building, make it nice, and then dedicate it, and it became holy, and it became a temple. And Nibley says it's the sacredness has nothing to do with it. It is the form and function. Now, he continues. Now, this is from his probably seminal article on the temple. He was asked to write this article for the dedication of the temple in England in 1958, what we call the London Temple, the one in New Chapel. He was asked to write this article, and it was published in the Millennial Star in April of 1958. So he says, what makes a temple different from other buildings is not its sacredness, but its form and function. What is that form? We can summarize 100 studies of recent date in the formula, a temple, good or bad, is a scale model of the universe. And so many people now use the word universe as a concept, as in universe of discourse, our personal universe of what we think and know. That's not what Nibley's talking about. He's talking about the actual physical cosmos. And he rails against people who try to spiritualize away the physicality of the cosmos. What is that form? We can summarize 100 studies in the formula, a temple, good or bad, is a scale model of the universe. Then he says, the first mention of the word templum is by Varro, for whom it designates a building specifically designed for interpreting signs in the heavens, a sort of observatory where one gets one's bearings on the universe. And then he goes on talking about the stone circles of England, like Stonehenge, places like Avebury. People actually went there and took astronomical sightings on the heavenly bodies, and that is part, says Nibley, of temple worship. The root tem in Greek and Latin denotes a cutting or intersection of two lines at right angles, the point where the cardo and the decumanus cross, hence where the four regions come together, every temple being carefully oriented to express the idea of pre-established harmony between a celestial and a terrestrial image. What he's getting at is to build a temple, you don't just go out, find a piece of land, and say, okay, here are the architectural drawings, we're going to put up a temple. In those early days, the person who was in charge would go out. In fact, Gary and I have been reading a book by, Gary, what's that book? The one on Genesis 1 by that professor.
Oh, John Walton?
John Walton.
Yes, it's, I'll find it here in a minute. I got it on my Kindle.
What he explains in this book is that when a person wanted, when they wanted to build a temple, they would go out at night and sit in the spot where they wanted the temple to be built, and they would sight to the North Star so they could get it exactly north-south, and then the next day they would set up their sighting posts when the sun comes up, goes over, and comes down to get exact east and west, and that's the cardo and the decumanus. It's the north-south and east-west lines, and there, where they crossed, right at that spot where they crossed, was where they would set up what they called the umbilicus mundi, the navel of the world. And that's what the temple became. It became the place that was the navel from which all nourishment from heaven came, and which linked the three worlds. And Nibley goes on to talk about the three worlds. There are three temples, one in heaven, one on earth, and one beneath the earth. Well, what do you mean? We build a temple. What do you mean a temple above the earth and a temple beneath the earth? All the ancient temples were built with that tripartite horizontal symmetry. And the font in the basement represents the temple below. The main floor represents the temple above. And then going through the veil into the upper part of the temple represents the temple on high. Here the four horizontal regions meet. So we have the crossing of the Cardo and the Decumanus. So we have the four horizontal regions and then the three vertical worlds. Everything had to be boxed to the compass. Everything had to be exactly north, south, east, and west. And anciently, all temples were built that way. Joseph Smith did it in Kirtland. Joseph Smith did it in Nauvoo. And even now, when you go to Salt Lake City, you go right to the southeast corner of Temple Square, and there is the Salt Lake Basin Meridian marker sitting right outside the walls. That is the Cardo and the Decumanus. Orson Pratt did the first surveying, and then the government surveyor came and checked Orson Pratt's work and found it was off by about 50 feet, but with those primitive instruments, you know, who would be surprised? And Dean set up a marker, and then they built a building over it. They built an adobe building where Orson Pratt could set his telescope and continue to take time measurements there. And that's what the southeast corner of Temple Square was. They had to do all that astronomical sighting in order to find exactly how to build a temple. It wasn't just build a building. There was a lot of ritual. There was a lot of sighting that had to be done. The Hopi in Arizona still do this. In order to set their ceremonies, they don't just say, well, it'll start on the 26th day of July. They actually have their ceremonies, and the ladder that goes out of the hole, see, their kivas are built exactly the same way. There's the sipapu in the bottom, which goes down into the lower world. There's the kiva level, and then the ladder goes up through a hole in the roof up into the fourth world, and they look to see which stars are rising through the ladder. They know exactly where their ladder sits, and the stars have to rise just exactly right in order for them to set the ceremonies. And Nibley, of course, says that the Hopis have the closest thing to our temple ceremonies of anybody else on Earth. It's not the Masons. It's not the Freemasons.
Yeah.
It's the Hopis.
And then he goes on to say, and so where did the Hopis get theirs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't get it from the Masons, that's for sure.
They certainly didn't. In fact, what Nibley said was, people think that the Masons are the place Joseph got this, and he says, as though a prophet had to rummage through a crow's nest to stalk a king's treasury.
That's right. Oh, you got to love Nibley.
Well, the other thing that's important about this is that the actual sequences in the sky, as Margaret, I was just reading something of Margaret the other day, one of the things that has to happen on the summer equinox is that the sun has to go straight down the temple through the east door, and the sun goes right into the Holy of Holies and illuminates the gold room that represents the Holy of Holies. This is now talking historically of temples. And then you need to understand the significance of the autumnal as well as the spring equinox. And I don't know, I was just telling somebody the other day the importance of when Joseph Smith goes to find the records for 4 years every year happens to be on the autumnal equinox.
Yeah. Mm.
Margaret also talks about in the biblical description, it talks about the 12 gates into the city. And she says that those gates were not exactly in the middle of the north and south walls of the temple complex. They were set so that the sun would shine through those gates at the solstices and the equinoxes. So even the early temples of this dispensation were built just that way so that the sun could come in, shine through certain windows, and illuminate the Holy of Holies.
Yep. There's a reason most temples face eastward, right?
That's right.
And there's a reason for that. The sun rises from the east. There's a lot of symbolism in that with the Son of God and his resurrection and his return, the second coming will come from the east and so forth. And absolutely. Should we move on with this, the paragraph?
Okay. The temple represents the principle of ordering the universe. The temple is where we get our bearings regarding our place in the universe. Now, those are Skinner's words. He's paraphrasing Nibley.
Yeah.
Nibley says the temple is the place where we get our bearings on the universe. It's not our bearings spiritually and emotionally. These are actual bearings on the universe. We go and take our own sightings.
Yeah.
To make sure everything is exactly north, south, east, and west.